Sometimes governments commit such egregious acts of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality that multiple whistleblowers come forward to complain. Sometimes those government acts even constitute war crimes or crimes against humanity. We'll talk about one of those cases, one where the facts are clear, but the ending might upset you. I'm John Kiriakou, and you're watching The Whistleblowers. Hello, and welcome to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. The U.S. military base at Guantanamo has been described by some former detainees there as hell on earth. Hundreds and hundreds of innocent people scooped up by the U.S. military and the CIA in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and elsewhere have been held there sometimes for decades, despite the fact that the vast majority of them had never committed a crime. We all know that on many occasions over the past 20-plus years, military and intelligence interrogators have gone too far in confronting prisoners at Guantanamo. Much of that immoral, unethical, and illegal behavior was documented in the Senate Intelligence Committee's torture report. Today, we're going to speak with a guest who served at Guantanamo for the U.S. military. He witnessed crimes committed against detainees, and then he went public. He risked everything, his career, his finances, even his family. But in the end, all these years later, almost nothing has changed. Dozens of prisoners are still being held incommunicado at Guantanamo. In many cases, they aren't even allowed access to their own attorneys, and almost none have ever been charged with a crime. Is the CIA still torturing people at Guantanamo? We don't know. The CIA says the torture program ended years ago, and we're just going to have to take their word for it. I, for one, will not. Our guest tonight is Joseph Hickman. Joe Hickman spent most of his life in the military, first as a Marine and then as a soldier in both the Army and in the National Guard. He's deployed on several military operations around the world, sometimes attached to foreign militaries. The recipient of more than 20 commendations and medals, Hickman was awarded the Army Achievement Medal and the Army Commendation Medal while he was stationed at Guantanamo. Joe, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, John. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Joe. I want to cut directly to the revelations that you made, Joe. The events leading up to it are somewhat typical of national security whistleblowers in that you were just a guy doing his job, and then one night something terrible happened. It involves the deaths of three prisoners all on the same night at Guantanamo. Tell us what happened.
Well, that night was June 9th. 2006. I was sergeant of the guard. I was a sergeant in charge of a bunch of different operational posts in Camp America. Camp America in Guantanamo houses the detainees. That's the camp where they're at. On this specific camp in Guantanamo, it was Camp 4 inside of Camp America, where I was in a tower. And I witnessed a paddy wagon. We called it the paddy wagon. It was a van where they transport detainees. Back up to Camp 4, take a prisoner out of Camp 4, put him in the paddy wagon, and drive out of the gate. And I watched them from the tower make a turn like they were leaving the base. At that time, I was suspicious, but they came right back and picked up another detainee. And did the same thing. Mm-hmm. By this time, I was really curious what was going on. Where were they going? It's a Friday night. Sometimes they would take them to medical, to the hospital or something like that, but this was Friday evening. There wouldn't have been a reason for them to take them there. So they came back for a third detainee, and when they did, I went to the post where the entry post to see where the van was actually going. I went to the entry post into Camp America, which they would have had to pass going up that road. When they went up that road on the third time, I watched the van go about 200 yards and then make a left, right as they got outside of Camp America. At that time, I knew that it was only led to two places at the time. It led to the beach, or it led to a facility that I knew was a CIA facility. We called it Camp No. No, it's not there, and no, it doesn't exist.
Right.
It was our name. So I knew they weren't taking detainees to the beach for amusement. So they were going to camp though, for sure. So then later on that night, I see the paddy wagon come back, enter the camp, and go right to the medical clinic, the detainee medical clinic inside of Camp 4. And they backed up, and they were unloading something. I couldn't see what they were unloading from my view. But at that point, about 15 minutes later, all the lights came on in the whole camp. Sirens were going off. It was a huge scene. And I went to the medical clinic. Everybody was running towards the left medical clinic. I went there and I saw a foreman outside, and this is what happened. She said three detainees just killed themselves. They hanged themselves in Camp 1. Mm. And I knew right then this didn't happen, because I had eyes on Camp 1. I had people with eyes on Camp 1 the entire evening. No one was hanging themselves. No one. The only thing suspicious was three detainees left in the paddy wagon, and the paddy wagon came back and backed up to the clinic. So I knew right then three men were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on my watch, and it really bothered me for years because that was my watch.
You went to the media to make your revelation, because after fully expecting the Naval Criminal Investigative Service to interview you, they never did. You saw a general on CNN say something about the events of that evening, and you knew that he was lying. There was a cover-up.
So,
what happened then? Your name is out there. I know the military tried to discredit you. Did they come after you then?
Yeah. At first, what happened is I saw Admiral Harris on CNN the same day, saying it was asymmetrical warfare. These guys hung themselves, and it was terrorist act somehow. And steamed me even more. I got home. I went to the IG. I put in an inspector general complaint about the incident. It didn't go anywhere at all. So I took it to, I got an attorney, and I took it to the Justice Department. And the FBI showed up, and a Justice Department attorney showed up, and they interviewed me for about 3 hours. They seemed really interested in everything, and my attorney was present at the time. And they asked if I had any other collaborating witnesses, and I did. I had 9 people come forward. It wasn't just me. That's what everybody doesn't understand. It wasn't just me. It was 9 other soldiers.
Wow.
That said no one put themselves in the camp that night. So they interviewed all of them, and 10 months later, they didn't hear. I'm actually in the military still at the time. 10 months later, they didn't hear anything. So my attorney called the Justice Department, and they said, their exact words, the gist of my story was true, but they're not going to charge anymore with any crimes.
Wow. Wow. Joe, like other national security whistleblowers, you did not back down. You saw this illegality take place, and you went public. And when there was no follow-up, you gave a long interview to Scott Horton in 2010 for Harper's Bazaar magazine, and then you wrote a book about your experiences called Murder at Camp Delta, A Staff Sergeant's Pursuit of the Truth at Guantanamo Bay. The military criticized the article harshly, but it won a National Book Award, one of the highest literary prizes in the United States. Clearly, the military's propaganda against you wasn't working. So what happened next?
Well, just to back up a little bit, I first went to Brian Ross. Brian Ross is very interested in the story, and he was going to run it. And I said, look, you have to run this. If you're going to do these interviews, you have to run it, because I'm still in the military.
Yeah.
The Pentagon's come after me. If you ask them questions about this and don't run it, I have nothing supporting you. And he said he would. And then one of the people working for him, who you're familiar with, I'm not going to mention names. he talked about running the story. So he was asked questions to the Pentagon. Nothing ran. And then the Pentagon came after me.
Mm-hmm.
I lost pay. There was a lot of problems they gave, very big problems. Then I did take it to Scott Horton. Scott Horton took it serious. Harper's took it serious. He ran the story. Before he ran the story, the Justice Department asked him not to run the story, and it went all the way to the top. Mm-hmm. And they personally asked him not to run the story. He said he was going to run it anyway. And they, like you say, they sharply criticized it, but it still won a National Magazine Award, and there was no way of you can criticize something, but you don't bring proof to show me it was wrong. So how does that work?
And you know the old saying, the truth is the best defense. And that's what you had behind you. Joe, you and I went on to write a book together about the Abu Zubaydah case. I wrote about the hunt for Abu Zubaydah and his capture and torture. And then you wrote about his further torture and his treatment at Guantanamo. Abu Zubaydah, we believed at the CIA, was the number three in Al-Qaeda. He wasn't. But a lot of people, particularly at my former organization, the CIA, did not like that book, not even a little bit. But then you went further and wrote an important book about the U.S. military's use of toxic burn pits in places like Kosovo and Iraq. What kind of challenges do you now face as a whistleblower who has focused for years on waste, fraud, abuse, and illegalities, specifically in the U.S. military?
I face, people love and hate me, you know. John, you came forward to, because you came forward as a whistleblower. You wanted to, you loved your position. You loved the CIA at the time, but you wanted to make things better. And that's all I want to see with the military. I want to make things better. It's not, whistleblowing is trying to make your organization better and more respected. To me, that's what it is.
Yeah. And then for you personally, have things gotten easier as the years have gone by? I know in my own case, the CIA turned its attention first to Ed Snowden and then to Julian Assange, and they sort of left me alone after a while. What's it been like for you with the military? Have they finally moved on? Or are you still dealing with the fallout from your whistleblowing?
No, they moved on pretty much. They're leaving me alone for now.
Yeah. And then when you continue to write books, have you encountered any further difficulties?
No, you know what's funny about the Guantanamo book? I got to mention this. The first review to come out on Amazon, still there, was by a guy named Crabtree. The book was out for a half hour, and I get a review. I'm like, how did this guy read this book in a half hour? But he wrote a terrible review, how much of a traitor I was, how terrible of a person I was. Come to find out, this guy Crabtree is the public relations officer at Guantanamo.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. That says a lot. My goodness, he didn't even have the presence of mind to use a made-up name. You can use a made-up name on Amazon when you do a book review.
Jason Leopold caught onto it right away and wrote something up on it immediately, but it was hysterical. But they pretty much left me alone since a lot of feedback from the burn pits. They tried to, I was an adjunct professor at Seton Hall. Mm-hmm. They tried to get me fired for that. From that job for the burn pit. Well, so there's always been, you go against them and they really come at you. I had a reporter the other day that I was doing an interview with. They got a little combative. And it was kind of interesting because they interviewed Colonel Baumgartner, who was JTF commander at Guantanamo at the time of January 9th. And he was telling them how wrong I was and how bad of a person I was and this and that. And I told the reporter, I'm not going to lose any sleep over what Colonel Baumgartner thinks of me. It's okay. I don't care. And they said, but, how could you say all this is true, would have these suicides, so-called suicides in Guantanamo, when it would take such a big cover-up of all these people, And I said, well, not too long ago, a professional football player, Pat Tillman, was killed by fratricide.
Good point.
And it took 152 people lied on that, saying he was killed in a blazing glory on the battlefield. 152 people lied. it would take much less to cover this up in Guantanamo, such a secure facility. We'd get very much fewer people that were involved. And they said, but you know, everybody gets caught doing this. I said, how do you know everybody gets caught doing this?
That's right.
You don't know that. You can't make that measurement.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Well, Joe Hickman, please stay with us. We are going to take a short break, and we're going to come right back with more. You are watching The Whistleblowers. Stay tuned.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Которые тут есть, это брызги от своеобразной волны.
На сегодняшний день водохранилище сработано до мертвого объема, так называемого.
С водой у нас просто ужас.
Мне 70 лет, я уже не могу тягать вот эти баклажки.
Меня увидел бабушка, которая шла с пустыми баклажками. Я сказал папе, что когда вырасту, буду находить воду и развозить людям.
Я говорю, хорошо, сынок, завтра начнем, без проблем. Рекорд был 27 бочек.
Если сбой подачи воды, то это угроза для жизни больного.
Pour couper l'eau à tout simplement la population du Донбасс.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold. And a new world that is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with U.S. military whistleblower Joe Hickman. Joe, good to have you back.
Thanks, sir.
As I mentioned, you and I wrote a book together on the capture, torture, and imprisonment of Abu Zubaydah. But you went on to write this highly acclaimed book on the U.S. military's use of burn pits. Drilling down a little bit, what led you to this issue, and what kind of reception did you get specifically from the military once you began documenting the case against the burn pits?
What led me down here is the book, my first book came out about the deaths in Guantanamo. A lot of soldiers were reaching out to me at that time saying, you know, thanking me for writing the book. And then one soldier one night reached out to me and said, I was at Guantanamo, really thank you for writing the book, and said, told our story. And then he started hacking on the phone, just coughing away. And he said,
"Jeez."
After a while, I said, are you okay? He said, I'm sorry, I brought the burn pits back from you from Iraq. And
oh,
I said,
my.
Iraq, tell me what happened. And he told me, he said, this is a story you should do. This is something you should look into. Everybody's sick. And he gave me a couple names of people in his unit. And then I took a couple of their names. And finally, I interviewed about 1,400 people. It just blew up, and all these people were sick and dying, you know? So I decided, yeah, this is something that has to be written on.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit then about the health and environmental impact of these burn pits. We're talking about bulldozing literally everything into a field, spraying it down with diesel fuel, and then lighting it on fire. And I mean equipment, medical waste, plastic, food, literally anything. And then animal all of a sudden, animal carcasses, right. And then all of a sudden, people started getting these rare cancers, including brain cancers. And I will add that my best friend from high school was responsible for the burn pits for overseeing the burn pits in Iraq. He came back from Iraq and then developed a very rare brain cancer and died at the age of 48. What did you find in this investigation?
What
did you find?
Well, I started off basically at the beginning. Where's all this trash coming from?
Yeah.
So a combat soldier usually accumulates about 9 pounds of trash a day per person.
Wow.
We had 100,000 people over there, plus we bombed these facilities and retook them over. And so we had all that garbage from there, you know, to burn. So we had, like you said, 10-acre fields, 50 tons of trash a day alive was burning a day, 50 tons at one point a day. It's just unbelievable amount of trash, and they're burning everything. But what really got me looking at it was, we have these soldiers sick, but what about the general population in the area, in these villages? Mm-hmm. And I found out that they were very sick. A lot of these kids were coming up with birth defects that were being born that the world has never seen before. And it was the first time they ever seen them, along with people just getting rare brain cancers in the villages as well, outside of camps. And it was truly a disaster at enormous proportions that always took a back burner in the news and still does today.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Did the military make any changes related to the policy of using burn pits after the book came out? Surely with all of the reports of cancers, including these brain cancers, and brain cancer that the son of President Biden developed, perhaps from the burn pits, and then your own research, it seems like something ought to have been done. Were any policy changes implemented?
There has been changes done to help the veterans that are sick. But I did see a standard operating procedure on how to set up a base. Mm-hmm. And they're still in that standard operation procedure. They're still using burn pits and not incinerators. I don't understand. For large forward operational bases like Balad and things like that, anything right. with a 5,000 men or more is what the standard operation procedure was for. So I don't know. I guess if we go to war again, time will tell. See if they put in, high temperature incinerators or not. That's what needs to be done. Trash has evolved over the years. It's not the same thing we're burning from Vietnam as we're burning now. There's right. a lot more styrofoams and plastics mm-hmm. and things like that. And you know, some people think that they were sick from the burn pits in Vietnam.
Sure.
Not only the, but trash has gotten much worse since then.
You know, it's as though, Joe, we learned nothing from the use of napalm or burn pits in Vietnam. I mean, every school child knows you don't burn styrofoam and you don't burn plastic and you don't live next to the garbage dump and to the incinerator. Yet we force our soldiers to do exactly those things. It just makes no sense to me.
When Saddam Hussein set the oil fields on fire, mm-hmm. that was like the fourth worst environmental disaster, they say, in the history of the world. But what about these, that they burned for 10 months. What about these burn pits that we had 273 of them that burned for 10 years?
Oh my God.
You know, that puts it in perspective.
It does.
The military does not, they preach a good environmental programs, but they don't practice what they preach.
Joe, tell us what your next project is. You've become something of a cross between a whistleblower and an investigative journalist. What are you looking at next?
I am looking, you're the first one I ever told this to. I am looking at sexual harassments in the military and how they're being reported and how they're being handled.
Fantastic.
And it may surprise a lot of people. I'll talk to you offline about this, but it's pretty confidential right now, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, without pressing you too far, it sounds like this is going to be something that is going to be newsworthy, like mainstream media newsworthy.
Yes, it's going to have teeth and it's going to surprise people.
Wow. And I hope you don't get too much pushback from the military.
Oh, you know I will. We live in that world.
Yeah, we did. Well, I would like to thank our guest today, Joseph Hickman, not just for joining us, but for his heroism in standing up to wrongdoing. And I mean wrongdoing at great personal risk. Remember, the arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Those are the words of Dr. Martin Luther King. And thanks to people like Joe Hickman, we can live those words. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're going to see you next time.